Chapter 1. Create Your Own Normal. It's a wintry Tuesday morning, and Family R's alarm clock is going off. Mr. and Mrs. R reluctantly extricate themselves from their sleepy spooning and go rouse their two boys. They switch on the central heating, scramble through hot showers, electric shaves and hair blow dries, and into freshly laundered clothes. They make coffee in the Nespresso machine, grab juice and milk from the refrigerator and slosh it into glasses and over cereal. Mrs. R loads the work folders she optimistically brought home with her last night into the hatchback and heads off to the office. She stops for an extra takeaway coffee on the way because she had a sweaty and restless night until waking at 4 a.m. to realise that the electric blanket was still on. It's school holidays, and since Mr. R works weekends and has Tuesdays off, he packs the kids into the station wagon and they head out to the cinema to see the latest animation blockbuster. They're halfway there when they realise that the younger boy has left his favourite toy at home. To avoid tears, they drive back to get it, which starts the older boy calling his little brother a stupid baby. Mr. R creates a swift distraction by announcing that after the movie, they'll go buy the new computer game the older boy has been talking about all week. To ensure peaceable snack consumption, each kid gets his own popcorn, fizzy drink, and candy for the movie. Mr. R isn't hungry, but feels a bit glum that his one day off has been swallowed by childcare and buys himself an extra large popcorn and an ice cream as consolation. After the movie, they go to the toy store as promised, but the store is out of stock of the game, so they drive across town to check if another store has it. It doesn't, so each of the kids gets to choose something else to make up for the disappointment. Mr. and Mrs. R had agreed that morning that there should be no takeaway lunches that day, given all the leftover potato salad and lamb roast from Friday night that needs eating. But by the time they leave the second toy store, the kids are pleading starvation, so they stop for pizza. The all-you-can-eat option costs hardly more than just ordering off the menu, so they choose that. Dad feels uncomfortably full by the time he gets up to pay, and the younger kid obviously had eyes bigger than his stomach, because as the heating in the car starts to make things stuffy, he vomits up ice cream and chocolate sauce all over himself. By the time they reach home and get his soiled clothes into the washing machine, it's already late afternoon, and Mr. R realises he hasn't even bought the new dog bed he'd meant to get to replace Fido's increasingly tatty-looking one. The kids play with their iPads in their bedrooms, and Mr. R puts the clothes through the dryer and stacks the dishwasher with the breakfast dishes. He then goes online to book the family flights to Sydney for Mrs. R's sister's 40th next month, and waits for his wife to get home so he can head off to the gym and also buy that dog bed on the way back. Mrs. R forgets her promise to come straight home and stops off for some shopping, picking up some kids' underwear multipacks that are on special and accidentally blowing more than she has earned so far that week on a beautiful silk skirt. She's not sure when she would wear it and knows she needs to lose a little bit of weight for it to fit nicely, but it's just so gorgeous. Because of her late return, Mr. R takes off to the gym so hastily that he forgets his training shoes. He doesn't feel like turning back and decides to just buy a new pair on the way. He figures he probably deserves an upgrade anyway, given how well he's been sticking to his exercise schedule. After working out, he grabs an electrolyte drink and protein bar and heads home. Everyone's pretty tired, so they decide to order Thai takeaway for dinner, binning the rest of the lamb roast, crank the heating up, and settle in for a cosy evening of TV. Would you consider this day to be one of luxury? Family R certainly didn't feel like they were living the high life, or even a particularly satisfying life on the day described. They were just trying to get through another day in a way that hundreds of millions of people would rate as normal. Yet 200 years ago, the amount of resources that each member of Family R consumed on this day would have been impossible for the average human to match, and challenging even for popes and kings. Looking just at energy use, Even as recently as the 1950s, a family of a similar socioeconomic standing would have used less than half this amount on a typical day. Miraculously, those middle-class 1950s folk weren't spending their waking hours bemoaning this agonizing deprivation. They felt just as normal as family are do today. In fact, there is American research suggesting that its 1950s citizens rated themselves as happier than its modern ones do. Such contrasts illustrate just how much our concepts of wealth and appropriate consumption are defined by comparing ourselves to those around us. Even those of us who least identify with the phrase "keeping up with the Joneses" can't help but measure ourselves against a hazy benchmark based on what our peers are doing and what popular and social media suggest people are doing. Consider again the kind of shifts in consumption we've highlighted above. Your pragmatic authors certainly don't bring them up so that we can all lash ourselves into a lather of consumer guilt. Far from it. We mention them because we think there's something marvelously liberating about acknowledging the total arbitrariness of what is considered normal. It essentially clears the slate for us to make up our own normal. Suddenly, we become free to do the tango on that slate, manoeuvring ourselves brazenly wherever our frugal hedonist super senses may lead us. Dearest reader, can you feel the exceedingly relative nature of things, allowing you to regard the whole notion of normal with more audacity, humour, and philosophical perspective? If so, then we're all together on the dance floor of infinite potential. It's time to boogie. Footnote. Your authors definitely aren't under the illusion that the 1950s were an idyllic phase in American history. For anyone who wasn't white or who didn't align with prescribed birth gender stereotypes, it stank big time. We only mention this mid-century era as an illustration of how more modest consumption levels are not antithetical to reported happiness. Discrimination, oppression, and narrow-mindedness, on the other hand, certainly are.